my gosh, who wouldn't want this kind of life, you know? You're married, you have kids, you have the home, the Benz in the driveway. It's like the American dream, supposedly, and I'm not happy. So is there something wrong with me? Like, am I broken? And that was really hard to look at those things and think that, no, I'm the problem.
I'm Julie Rose, and this is Top of Mind. I have been a radio journalist for 2 decades, but a few years ago, I found myself avoiding the news for long stretches because of how depressing and divisive it all seems. I still wanted to be informed and engaged on important issues, though, and I figured I couldn't be alone in that. So we created this podcast. Each week, we tackle one tough topic in a way that will challenge you, help you feel more empathy, and empower you to become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor, and a more effective advocate. Today, confronting uncomfortable truth. This is a Stick With It conversation with Karen Freeland. She is author of the book, Grab Life by the Dreams. She's a life reinvention coach, and she's host of the podcast, Rock Your Reinvention. Karen, I'm so happy to have you with us today. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So the concept behind Stick With It is that moment when you decide to stay open and stay curious in the face of information that challenges you, maybe because you disagree or because it's just not what you want to hear. The topic-based episodes that Top of Mind does are a chance to practice engaging with perspectives that challenge us. And then these Stick With It conversations are where we get to see what it looks like in daily life, what this work looks like. And we developed this conversation series because we realized that the ability to stick with the discomfort of a challenging perspective turns out to be really critical in overcoming polarization in our relationships and our communities. And it's in these Stick With It moments that the magic happens, that we're able to deepen a relationship or feel new empathy or get more clear on our own views, or in your case, Karen, find the courage to do something that you were really afraid of, but that has made your life better. So I'm really excited for you to share your story, and let's just dive in. What do we need to know? What's the background to set up this story?
Yeah. Okay. So I had always had a creative lifestyle. Growing up, I was a dancer. I loved to express myself. I loved to be on stage and really allow myself to just be authentically who I was. And, you know, I went to school, college to dance. And after school, I was like, okay, this is it. The world is my oyster. I'm going to follow my dream. Here we go. And I moved to Miami to do some acting, which seems like an odd move. I really had wanted to go to New York with my boyfriend at the time, now husband, but he didn't invite me. So I was like, all right, well, then I'm just going to go do my own thing. And I had the opportunity to go to Miami. Had mild success, you know, was doing well down there, booked some commercials, got some TV opportunities and some movie opportunities, got my SAG card. And I was like, wow, if I can do this here, let me go to New York. Well, shortly after I got to New York, the bills and the expenses and reality set in. And I was like, okay, this sounds great. And I still want to pursue my dream, but let me just go get a corporate job for a year. And then after a year, I'll quit. I'll have saved up all this money and I won't have to wait tables anymore and I can just focus on acting. Well, that's when I got addicted to the money drug. So I'm sure some of our listeners may relate to this, right? You get roped into those benefits and to the paychecks. And I was in sales, so the commission checks were amazing. And suddenly it was like, oh, I can afford a Coach purse. Oh, I can go out with my friends and I can pay for the whole bill at the dinner or at the bar. This is amazing. This feels really good. Maybe I should keep going in this direction. So for the next 15 years, I slugged it out in corporate. Yes, 15.
Wow.
So much for quitting after a year, right?
Right. Like you were all in. It became your career, climbing up the ladder.
Totally. Mm. I was so motivated by money and titles and all the external validation that came along with climbing the ladder. Mm. But there was always that nagging little voice in the back of my mind, that inconvenient truth that I didn't want to look at, that was like, but Karen, what about your dreams? Mm. but Karen, this doesn't feel good. This isn't who you are. You're putting on a mask every day. Like, do you really want to live this way?
So it didn't feel good for you. I mean, there was like that you were conflicted about this because you liked the money, but was your mental health not doing great? Was it hard for your relationships? Like, what was going on that made you sort of not want to have to look at this truth, but also know it was back there in the back of your mind?
Yeah, I think it ebbed and flowed for different reasons at different seasons, you know? So once we got married, and look, there was a period of time where corporate was really great. Like, I loved it. I was having fun, you know? I was a pharmaceutical sales rep, and I was going to the best dinners in New York City, and like, it was cool until it wasn't, right? So there was when I started having kids, I'm thinking, how do you quit your job? You got to be responsible. No, this is what parents do. Like, this is adulting. Keep going. Like, you'll figure it out. Maybe the next position you get will finally make you happy. Maybe if you were making this amount of money, then you'd be happy. So it wasn't always like this glaring truth or this big blinking light in front of me. It was just kind of this like dull, maybe I don't love this, you know?
Yeah, didn't feel fulfilling for sure. Didn't really light you up consistently.
And it got much worse later, right? Yeah. Relationship problems. I mean, the more and more my husband and I would argue over things, you know, I wouldn't come home from the office until 8 o'clock at night. Then I would be home for an hour, do a couple dishes, maybe have a quick conversation about like stuff we needed to get done tomorrow or whatever. And then I was right back on my laptop. He would go to bed. I would still be up working till sometimes midnight or later. And it was just like we were roommates, you know, a lot of the passion, the spark, it was all gone. And it was so hard because it was like, how did we get here? This isn't what we signed up for. And this isn't the kind of wife or mom I want to be. I mean, my kids literally just saw the top of my head with my face in a phone for at least the first 5-6 years of their life. I mean, that was all they saw of me.
Yeah. So what was it at that point then? I mean, this is going on for years and years, right? And what do you think was keeping you from sort of leaning into the tough truth at any given point during that period?
Some of it was societal pressure, right? Like every group that I'm part of were strong career women who were making the six figures, who were the breadwinners of their family. And I thought, well, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, right? This is what all the people around me tell me is a good woman, is a strong woman, is a good example for her kids. And not that those things aren't, okay? So let's be really clear. For those who are in corporate and they love what they do and they're making good money, yes, sister, I love you. Keep doing it, right? But there was this voice inside of me that I was ignoring because of allowing all the external influences to become my opinions and my thoughts without running them through some sort of filter of my values. And that's one of the things I love to do with my clients when I'm working with them is to really get clear on what are your values so that we have a filter that we can start running those decisions through. And then there's this other piece that goes back to that scarcity mentality of waiting tables and barely getting by and not having enough food always on the table, you know, and having to go to the restaurant and eat the leftover baked potatoes at the end of the night because I don't know if I'm going to have enough money for a meal tomorrow. And so to walk away from that when on paper, my gosh, who wouldn't want this kind of life? You know, you're married, you have kids, you have the home, the Benz in the driveway. It's like the American dream, supposedly. And I'm not happy. So is there something wrong with me? Like, am I broken? And that was really hard to look at those things and think that, no, I'm the problem.
Yeah. So as happens a lot when we're confronted with information that we disagree with or that challenges our worldview or that sort of opens up the possibility that we might have to do something really scary that we're afraid of or that we don't even know the answer, but it's uncomfortable. Like often what happens is instead of sort of having the stick with it moment and kind of like getting into it, we do the opposite. We run away, which you did, it sounds like, for a good long time, shut it down. But what happened? What changed? What finally allowed you to kind of take a hard look at the way that your life was not matching up with your values?
Yeah. So we had a couple of deaths in the family. Mm. And before I share that, I will just say in my book, Grab Life by the Dreams, I have actually included a few journal entries of where I am looking at these inconvenient truths and saying things like, I know I want to quit this job. I know I don't want to do this anymore, but I'm just going to throw myself deeper into it and like buy the bends to trap myself in my job so that I don't walk in and do something rash and quit one day. So I just wanted to call that out because I think it's so important. And so many of us do this a lot of times in coaching world. We call it self-sabotaging, where we do the exact opposite thing that we know we want to be doing or should be doing because it is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So just share that before we get into the deaths. So end of 2018, beginning of 2019, we had two deaths in the span of 4 months in our family. Now, they were not youngsters. It wasn't unexpected. Mm. They were both elderly. They were sick. But for me, the thing that really set me off into a series of a downward spiral and panic attacks and drinking heavily was that this was the end of a generation. So this was my grandparents' generation. They were all deceased now. Next up was my parents, and then, oh no, it's me. And that facing of my mortality, it just shook me in a way that I had never had to confront my mortality before.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that. It's never easy to lose people that you care for. How did you respond then? You said you had panic attacks and drinking and sort of some unhealthy coping habits. How did you get through that to a place where you were really able, if that was the inciting event to bring your stick with it moment to fruition, where you would sit with all the discomfort of where your life was and the choices that you'd made and the choices you were afraid to make. What was it, do you think, that kind of cracked you open to that when you were in that dark place?
It was multiple things kind of working their way in at the same time. Mm. And so, you know, one of those things, honestly, is just rock bottom. Like, you get to a point where you're just start drinking at 10 a.m. in the morning, and you're like, okay, this isn't good. I know this isn't right. Why am I doing this to myself? So a lot of self-reflection, a lot of journaling, and really going back, not just journaling and walking away, like going back to my journal entries and just noticing the patterns and asking myself, why am I tolerating these situations if I know I'm not happy? And expressing my fears in a way that I had never articulated them before. Mm. And then looking at them and going, I can't even believe I think these things about me or my life or my abilities. Like, it just, that really helped. And then spirituality also. I started exploring my faith more because of the panic attacks were really focused on this idea of dying. And I was scared of dying. So I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would be absolutely terrified that I had just been sleeping. I had no idea what's going on in the world, right? It's still turning. Everybody's still doing their thing. But I'm sleeping and I'm not part of it. And is this what death is like? Is it a black nothingness? And I would just instantly go into all-out bawling panic attack mode. But I didn't want my husband to know, so I'm hiding this, like quietly crying in the bathroom, flushing the toilet to mask my sniffles. And my husband, I ended up did confiding in him, and he found this book. I think it's Dr. Kelvin Chin, and he talks about overcoming the fear of death. And there were all these truths I had to start exploring. Well, Karen, if you believe that there is a heavenly afterlife, then you can't possibly be scared of a black nothingness because that's not even your belief system. So what is it that you're really scared of? And I realized it was the fear that I was wasting my life, that I was doing something that didn't really have an impact, that didn't fulfill me, and that if I could, I had enough hope and belief that if I could get to a place where I was doing something that fulfilled me and had purpose and meaning, and I was making an impact, that I could enjoy my life again.
So what did you do about that?
Yeah, so I basically drew a line in the sand and was like, okay, we're not doing this anymore. What does that look like? And I didn't even know that this was a technique at the time. It's called rewiring the brain, and it's something that you can do, but I did not know that I just kind of came up with it on my own, and then later through my life coaching certification realized, oh, this is an actual thing. So when I would go into the bathroom at night and my brain would start to launch into the panic attack, I would very quickly shift my thoughts to anything else. And I would launch into these diatribes about how chipped my nails were or how I need to get a hair appointment or how I'd love to repaint our bathroom or whatever, anything and everything just to block out those thoughts. And over time, and it was fairly quickly actually, I realized that I could start going to the bathroom at night without having to have this random dialogue because my brain was starting to associate a different experience now with getting up in the middle of the night. I asked my husband to help me stop drinking. And, you know, we decided we weren't going to have it in the house Monday through Thursday, just going to be like a weekend thing if we did at all. And as I started not to drink as much, I had more free time. I had more energy. I was like excited about life again. I started writing a book and getting my story out there so that I could help other people. And as I started to make these changes, getting a hobby, I started dancing again and going back to my creative roots. It was like, forget about trying to make money from this, but just what brings you joy and how do you find more of that in your life? And during all of this, you know, exploration phase and changing my brain, I got laid off, which most people would be like, oh no, that sounds terrible. But I'd been fantasizing about this, honestly, for years. I was like, if only somebody would walk in and lay me off and give me a severance package, then life would be great.
Because you didn't want to quit. You wanted to be able to go with some of the benefits, but also just like the difficulty of like making, if someone else could make this decision for me, then I can run with it.
Yeah, because then I can blame them if it doesn't work out. Like I can blame the corporate. If we make a decision on our own, we have no one to blame but ourselves, right? Yeah. And that's a scary, inconvenient truth. And probably one of the reasons I also stayed in corporate so long. But in that moment, it was like, oh my gosh, this was the universe's way of saying, Karen, everything you've been talking about, all the exploration you've been doing, this idea of writing a book, like all of this, yes, 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 and yes. And now, because I know you're not quite strong enough to make this call on your own, I'm taking away the one crutch that is holding you back. You don't have a job anymore. Mm. And it was so freeing. Don't get me wrong, it stung a little. I mean, nobody wants that call, right? It doesn't feel good to be like, hey, we don't want you anymore. Your position is no longer here. So it was still emotional, but it was fantastic. And really, it's one of the best things that have happened to me in my life to date.
Yeah, why?
Well, I think one of the reasons I'm grateful for it is you appreciate it more, right? It's one thing to go through, to read a book, let's say, and just experience someone else's transformation. It's quite another thing for you to go through it yourself because you just have that appreciation for how far you've come and the things that you've been able to do. You know, we don't give ourselves enough credit. We are so strong. We are so much stronger than we ever allow ourselves to believe. And sometimes we have to experience that to be like, oh, wow, look what I've come through. I'm kind of amazing. And I don't mean that like just about me, but I mean, we can all be saying that about ourselves, right? Like we are amazing and we're capable of so much. So that for me was like, it was amazing to have that gratitude. But then not having a job, you know, it gave me this freedom to explore, but also this push like, okay, you don't have a job, girlfriend. So we do need to get some income flowing. What's that going to look like? And I thought, well, I've been able to completely reinvent my life. Why would I keep this to myself? Like, why would I not take the steps and processes that I have used and not give those to other women who are feeling stuck and frustrated and at rock bottom and they're self-medicating and they have so much to offer the world, they just don't know how to package it up and go turn it into something that fulfills them. Like, I can't keep that to myself. That would be the epitome of selfish. And that's what really led me to write Grab Life by the Dreams and start my life coaching business so that I could just walk the walk with other women.
Karen, thank you so much for sharing that story. I'd love to know, as you're working with other with your clients, how often is it that part of the problem is that they're resisting sort of taking a hard look at that uncomfortable truth, the inconvenient truth?
Always. And it's to varying degrees, right? So some of them are a little hard to crack open and get them to really go there than others. You know, some are just like, they're so ready because they're kind of been at that rock bottom place like I was. And they're just like, I'll do anything you tell me to do. Like, just show me the way, give me the blueprint and help me out of this. So it really varies. But yeah, I think to some degree, there's always that inconvenient truth. And it's different for everybody. Like, I just had a client recently who gave in her notice to retire. And we did a lot of work getting her to retire. She is in her late 60s, okay? Wow. You would never know it to look at her. And she's got a ton of gas left in the tank, and there's amazing things that she's going to go on and do. It's just not in a toxic, chaotic work environment that has her working, you know, 60-hour weeks. Like, that's not for her anymore. But it took so much for her to recognize her age and to start just authentically being herself, because for so long she's lied about her age. Because in the corporate world, after 50, it's kind of like, well, thanks, you've been great, have a nice life.
Right.
Not everywhere. But, you know, there's more, we're seeing that ageism. And so for her, it was really scary for her to confront that. But eventually, through a lot of mindset work, a lot of reflection, we were able to get her there. And she delivered that notice confidently. And now she's like, I'm so excited. I can't wait for my last day.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It's awesome.
So so the book is called Grab Life by the Dreams.
Yes. The Essential Guide to Getting Unstuck and Living Your Purpose.
And your podcast is called Rock Your Reinvention. What are you hoping to accomplish with that podcast?
Yeah, really. There's two things. One, unpacking the journey that I went on, just like we've done here, but then really lasering in on these specific steps and processes that people can do in their life, right? So there's one episode where I talk about no longer listening to the lies, because we tell ourselves a lot of lies, right? Like, oh, I wouldn't be a good business owner, or I can't leave this job. No one else would pay me this much money. I mean, those are lies. But if we don't confront them, we just continue to exist under them. And then, so there'll be, you know, solo episodes like that where I'm really diving deep into the different aspects of the journey and how others can reinvent their life. But then also interviewing amazing women who have done this. Mm. They have pivoted, they have walked away from the six-figure salary, they have started their own businesses or own organizations. And I wanted to tell those stories because I don't want people to think that this only works for me. Like, this is not something that is unique to me. It's something that is repeatable, that my clients do all the time, that you can do. So I just want to have as much impact as I can, right? We're here for such a short amount of time. And again, if there's just another way, another outlet that I can reach women who are thinking about making a change, it just felt like I needed to do it.
Where can people find the podcast? Where can they find you?
Go to KarenFreeland.com. That's the best place to find me. You can see all of my books there. You can check out the podcast from there. And I spend most of my time in my Facebook group. So for those of you that are on Facebook, come hang out in Successful Working Women, Rocking Reinvention. We would love to see you in there. And there's lots of exclusive content and resources that you won't find on any of my other platforms.
Karen, thank you so much for joining me today, for sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
It's been amazing. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so now it's your turn. Email me about a stick with it moment that you have had, and let's bring you on the podcast to talk about it. I'd love to share it with other people. My email address is topofmind@byu.edu. And remember, it doesn't have to be a huge life-changing story. Most of my stick with it moments are pretty small, actually, but they add up to helping me feel more empathy and seeing important issues with more clarity. In fact, just about every topic-based episode of Top of Mind that we do brings some kind of information that does not align with my opinion, and I have to work really, really hard to stay open to that instead of just dismissing it or even editing it out of the podcast. And I'll just share one quick one from next week's episode about open primaries. I went into that episode and doing those interviews pretty convinced that the main problem with primary elections in this country is that political parties have too much power over who votes in them. that if we could just open those elections so that you didn't have to be a member of a specific party in order to vote in a primary, that that would basically solve all of the problems that I feel primary elections face. But that is not what the research shows. It's not what the expert we interviewed concludes. And it's not even actually where the advocates for open primaries or the politicians we spoke with land on this issue. I really wanted it to be kind of cut and dried. And when I realized it was not, that was pretty frustrating to me. But it also meant that I had to do a lot more reading and thinking about why primary elections are so bothersome for me personally. And the upshot of sticking with that discomfort is that I decided to engage with a political party more than I ever had before. I actually went to a primary caucus meeting, something I never, ever would have considered doing before because of my disdain for political parties. So, a little bit more clarity there for me as I am on this journey to try to be a better citizen, a kinder neighbor, and a more effective advocate. I'd love to hear your story. Again, email topofmind@byu.edu. Top of Mind is a BYU radio podcast. I'm Julie Rose. We'll talk soon.